Andrea, we got a fun car podcast because today we're going to be talking about something that we, did right, and that is buy the cheapest Wrangler in the country.
Heck yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your car chat.
Of course.
Yes, because normally we would be doing a truck podcast, but now we're talking about Jeeps and cars.
Yep. So we're going to be talking about our cheap Jeep video series. So if you're into off-roading and if you're off-roading on a budget, this is a great topic that I think you'll want to learn about. And then we're going to be going over some of the recent cars that we've had here to review. Actually, me and you got to a drag race. I don't think anybody's drag raced these two vehicles in America yet.
That was a lot of fun, dude. And also a tiny bit scary.
Yeah, so
it was scary. For me, at least.
We drag raced a new Ioniq 5N, which is the 600-plus horsepower electric Ioniq, against the new Tesla Model 3 Performance.
Yes.
Those drag races have been done in Europe, but not here in America. So I think we were one of the first to do that. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the other vehicles that were at the office. But let's start with our cheap Jeep. What do you think of our cheap Jeep, Andre?
Well, first of all, thank you for listening, guys. And thanks if you're watching on YouTube. There's an image behind us of this Jeep Wrangler that we bought. And dude, I think it looks amazing. It's a two-door Wrangler. And the guys and the team put beefy tires on it. And I think it looks incredible.
Yeah. So let's kind of go take a step back and talk about the concept. So we've been doing cheap Jeep series now probably for 10 years. And usually what we do is we buy Jeeps under $5,000, Compasses,
TJs, XJs,
yeah, all kinds of J's.
All the older J's.
All the J's. But this time we wanted to see if we can actually build out a Jeep on a budget. So the idea is we went and found the cheapest Jeep we could here in Denver.
But brand new.
Brand new, yeah. Yes. 2024 Jeep Wrangler Sport. It only had two options. It had the hardtop, and it had the $4,500.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's expensive automatic transmission. And that's because a few years ago, Tommy bought basically the same Jeep, the Willys edition. And we never kind of got done telling that story because he got engaged and needed the money to get married.
And also got married, yes.
And so, unfortunately, that Jeep went bye-bye. And so we never actually had a chance to really finish that story. So we thought, well, let's finish the story. And let's see if we can build out a cheap Jeep Wrangler without having to go getting a Rubicon. And the way that we're doing that is, Bay, by buying the cheapest one. So it was $41,000 was the MSRP on this bad boy.
Okay, but you said the automatic transmission, which is the 8-speed,
Cost
$4,500. Yeah. Plus the top.
Another $1,500.
Yeah, so that's already $6,000 on top of what would have been a little bit more affordable Jeep. But we also got a deal. I mean, we didn't pay full sticker price.
No, it was discounted, so there was money on the hood, and we ended up walking out of there, out of Johnson's where we bought it. Thank you, guys. With tax and everything, like $35,500. So that's everything. That's all in.
Okay.
Which is, still a lot of people in the comments are saying, well, that's expensive, $35,000. And I'd be like, hey, the average new car price is around $47,000. So it's still, you're looking at $12,000 less than the average new car. Now, this is a bare bones Jeep, Andre. Make no mistakes, right? It's got roll-up windows.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
With actual things you turn, to roll down or up your window. And it's the last vehicle to have this, last brand new vehicle, right?
Yeah, they're getting rid of it because apparently it actually costs them more to make a roll-up window Wrangler than it does to have electric windows. But that's Stellantis for you, so I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to point out the other obvious factor is that it doesn't have central locking.
Yes, yeah,
so which is kind of a pain in the ass.
When you pick up the key, yep. right, there's no buttons on it, actually. Mm-mm. So just like a switchblade key, yeah. right, like a Jeep would be. But you turn it up, you know, each way, and there's no buttons on it. So there's no, like, you know, remote lock or unlock. You know what? Does it have an app? It might have an app control where you can connect the app, you know, to your vehicle. And you might be able to do some of those things via the app, I would bet you.
I bet you can't. I bet you they figure that out. Oh, if you can, well, it might be an upsell.
So,
well,
so here's
I'll look. Here's, I'll look.
Here's what happened to. Remember, I had the F-150 yeah. XL work truck.
Yeah.
My hybrid truck that I had a couple years back. Well, that was also very bare bones, but it did have app connectivity, and it allowed me to do like remote starts, for example.
Here's the app. I got you the app. See if you can find. There's
okay,
no
Jeep Wave. Okay. Okay.
There's no central locking. So, in order to.
It tells me what the fuel level is.
Right. But in order to unlock the car, you actually physically. This is crazy. You have to stick the key in the door, both passenger and driver, and lock it and unlock it manually. And then you don't stick the key in the ignition. There is a push button start. But I don't think that this has actual actuators for the locks.
Oh, because it's only key driven.
Right. Yeah. It's actually the old school. You turn the key in the lock. Locks, and you turn it the other way, and it unlocks.
There's so. Valet mode.
Uh-huh. Sure, that's yeah, there.
I don't see any locking here, dude.
Anyway, the point was not to bitch and moan about the fact that we didn't get power windows or power locks. The point was to get the cheapest one we could, and then to try to build it up and make it as good as a Rubicon. Now, the great thing, well, it used to be great. It's gotten much harder. The great thing in the past is when somebody would buy a Rubicon Jeep, right? A Rubicon has taller springs. It's got about an inch and a half more ground clearance. It's got bigger tires. This thing had like really crazy like street tires. Rode yeah. great. Best riding Jeep, best steering Jeep I've ever had. But, oh, my God, when we took it up a very, very difficult trail, Kelly Flats, that video's up in LTFL, it was like a goat on ice, man. We almost rolled it twice. Just no grip on those tires. So what people do is they would buy a Rubicon, and then because they wanted the lockers and the disconnectable electronic sway bar.
And the bigger axles and the bigger 44s, transfer
case. Right, yeah, yeah. So they would buy that, but that's never enough, right? So then they would take off the wheels and tires and go
up. Sometimes the shocks even.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And upgrade and lift it, right? So yeah. Rubicon comes on 33s from the factory. Ours came on 31s. And so it used to be that you just go on Craigslist or, in this case, Facebook Marketplace, and there would be a plethora of these takeoff wheels and tires that somebody just took off right after they bought the vehicle, and then you can get them for cheap. Well, those days are gone, Andre.
What happened to those days?
I don't know. I have no...
Where do all those parts go?
I think people, because of supply issues and because of economy, all that stuff has disappeared. People have figured out that that's how you can just get, you know, relatively inexpensive tires. So I spent a week on Facebook trying to get wheels and tires for that Jeep. Finally, I found a set of JT, that's the Jeep Gladiator truck, wheels and Falcon Wild Peaks that had pretty much a lot. So you could get them, right? But like people have driven them, and then the tire is almost bald, or it's like 80% bald. These are relatively new. The guy took them off, I think, maybe like 10,000 miles into owning that vehicle. And so I was able to get four wheels and tires plus a fifth tire, which we still have
spare
to mount.
Tire, yeah.
Have to mount, not the wheel. So right now we'd have to put on the black wheel, which would look stupid because that's what came with it. So I have to find another wheel. And he also gave me all of the suspension parts they took off of it. Now, you can't necessarily put JT, Jeep Gladiator, rear suspension coils on the back of a two-door Wrangler. But he also gave me or sold me the Fox shocks, which you can. Those are, okay. We think of those as just bolt-on. So for $800, I got five tires, four wheels, and all the goodies off
and some suspension stuff.
And some suspension
stuff. That's a good deal.
I think that's a good deal, yeah.
But it took you at least a week to find it.
Yeah, right? It took me, you know, people are so flaky. So I found those same wheels for less, for $500 in Salida, which is far from where we're at. And I emailed the seller, and I'm like, hey, I'll buy them. Looked like it had good tread, and the seller was like, oh, I've got somebody coming. This is like on a Tuesday, and I've got somebody coming on Saturday. So if they don't buy them, you can have them. And I was like, dude, you do not know what Facebook is like, because I was like, I'll come by today with $500 in cash, and I'll buy them on the spot. And that person, of course, was like, no, I've already got somebody coming. And then I got an email earlier this week saying, oh, by the way, that person flaked. And well, I was like, really?
You tried to tell them.
I tried to tell them in a nice way that that's what's going to happen. They were, I guess, new to Facebook, because Facebook is the flakiest place, Facebook Marketplace, in the world. But by that point, I had spent $200 more. I didn't have to drive to Salida, which is nice. Salida, for those of you not familiar with Colorado, Salida.
That's 6 hours almost round trip, maybe 5 hours.
Yeah, it's a ways, yeah. Whereas this guy was in Evergreen, which was basically 45 minutes.
Okay.
So I spent $200 more, but I saved, you know, a whole day of driving. So I felt that was worth it.
And so the guys and you put them on the Jeep.
Yeah, and they look so much better.
You swapped it.
Yeah.
And it looks purposeful now. I mean, but you didn't touch the suspension yet, right?
No, I was worried. So I was worried that they were going to rub, right? Because we basically went from 31s to 33s.
Okay.
On a sport, not on a, you know, so it's not as tall. Right now, if you look at the picture, you can see that those tires are pretty much stuffed into the wheel wells.
Yeah.
But Tommy took it up ironclads, and that video is over on All TFL. And then he manually disconnected the sway bar, which you can do, and took it up a really hard trail and no rubbing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But yes.
It just doesn't look right. It looks like the wheels and tires are just stuffed into those.
Well, this image of it climbing over a rock, I mean, it looks fine. I love the way this looks, because the front looks a little bit taller. The back has more weight on it, so it's a little bit lower. I think it looks great. So, I mean, you could, of course, lift it just a little bit.
So here's what we spent so far. $800? Yeah, $800 on wheels, tires, and Fox shocks.
Okay.
We spent $140 on brand new rock rails. You see those?
So somebody, yes. Yeah. That's important.
Those are Mopar. Somebody bought them. We got them out of the box. We spent $140. Our man Alex here, who also has a two-door Wrangler, got the same things for $20, which made me feel bad. But ours were out of the box, so we did those. Otherwise, you know, you
that's a good deal too.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
And then Tommy last week found somebody took off all the suspension bits off of a two-door Rubicon. So that includes the springs, that includes the shocks, that includes everything else that you take off when you lift it. And so we bought all those parts for another $100.
Okay.
So let's see. 800 plus 140 is 940 plus another 100. So we're about $1,040 into it. And once we put all that on, we should, Andre, we should basically have a Rubicon without paying a Rubicon price.
No, you shouldn't.
Well, we won't have the lockers.
No, you won't have front and rear lockers. You won't have the 4-to-1 transfer case. You won't have the tougher axles. No. You don't have a Rubicon.
This has Dana 44. In the rear, I think.
Okay.
Whereas the Rubicon has them in the rear and in the front, or what? Vice versa, one
but,
of those.
But I think the point you're trying to make, and Tommy and Case are trying to make, the point you're trying to make is that you don't really have to spend another $10,000.
Well, it's probably more 15,
on the Rubicon.
It's probably more like
or
15.
More 15.
Look,
to actually get the same capability.
Here's the crazy part, right? It's actually a bargain. To get a Rubicon, because if you wanted to do it right, not like take off parts, but if you wanted to create your own Rubicon, if you wanted to get front and rear lockers, you wanted to get Dana 44s, it would cost you a lot more than that.
Disconnectable sway bar,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, so in a way it's weird, because we're building a Rubicon on a budget, but yet a Rubicon for what you get gets you a lot, and if you had to actually build it to the same standard, it would cost you a lot more. So it's kind of weird, but you know.
Well, but when the factory does it, it's a better deal.
Yeah, exactly.
When the factory does it properly, yes.
But we're trying to, you know, get to like, let's say 70% of a Rubicon, the looks of it, without necessarily going and getting the front and rear locker. Because let's face it, Andre, we've done a boatload of off-roading, and you know, lockers are nice, but for the most part, for most of the off-roading that we do, unless you're doing some really crazy stuff, which we've done, you really don't need the lockers. You want the lockers.
Yeah.
And then the disconnectable sway bar, of course, in the Rubicon, it's a little switch. But you can buy like a pin that you can, you know, right now the way it works is the sway bar is connected, you know, via, I think it's a number 8mm or something like that, right, wrench. So you can basically unscrew it, and then you can zip tie it so it's not flopping around. But okay. You can also buy a pin that then you insert and take out, and then
or and you just manually remove it.
You could buy like for $120 just a manual disconnectable sway bar where you unhook it and then there's like a little place you put it so that it doesn't flop around. So I think we're going to do that. So we'll have the disconnectable sway bar. You're going to have to get dirty to do it. We'll have the bigger lift. We'll have the better tires. We won't have the lockers. I mean, you could do lockers, but then it gets really expensive. Like, you know, you could do a lunchbox locker, which is a manual locker that causes it to crab when it's not under. You could do an ARB air locker, which is expensive, and you got to carry onboard air. We don't want to do any of that. So I figure for like close to $1,000, we can get to, let's call it 70% of the way to a Ruby.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
And also, you can make up the rest of the way 30% extra with skill. You know, in experience, right? You mentioned experience, and I think a lot of maybe listeners and viewers will say would agree with this: is that if you pick the right line, if you you know what you're doing, if you're two-footed, sometimes, right? We're using brake and gas on an automatic at the same time, kind of feathering them, and if you have the skill, and if you air down the tires, you can actually go a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah. And then we actually have gotten brand new tires from our tire friends. And so we are going to be running actually a winter tire test. So we've got all terrains coming from Falcon, from BFG, and from Firestone. So we will, at the end of the day, have brand new tires for this Jeep.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'll be cool. A lot of fun. And we'll do some winter off-road testing with all three of those brands. And they're all the same size, so we got to go buy more wheels. But anyway, the cool part about this is that when we did swap out to the Falcons from the ones that came on the Jeep, it's a huge transformation. It's like night and day, right? So these are, I think the ones we had on there were 255s. These are 285s. So not only are they taller, they're maybe like just under an inch taller, but they're also wider. Incredible amount of off-road ability. You do lose some street ability. So Tommy, when he first swapped the tires, he was driving with his lovely wife, Morgan, and she was complaining how loud the tires are.
Yeah, they can be.
And then he asked me, you know, I drove it, and he asked me, did you think it was loud? And I'm like, it just sounds like a Jeep now. Right? To me, those are MTs. I guess people think that stands for mud trains, but I guess it means for maximum traction. I don't know.
I think different tire manufacturers have different definitions, right?
Yeah. But to me, it just now sounds like a Jeep.
Yeah.
I immediately associate that sound with a Jeep. And when I was driving the one with the stock wheels and tires, I was like, this is remarkable. I've never seen a Jeep drive and steer so well on the road.
And so quiet, too.
Yeah, and then we almost rolled it twice taking it off-road. So
yeah,
not worth it. The other thing we might do, is if we can find the parts, is we got like these plastic bumpers. I would love to get like a Rubicon bumper or bumpers for it.
It would be more purposeful looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be kind of a change in look, because you could dent this or kind of tear this plastic bumper apart, you know, on a rock or something.
The question is, you know, can we do this on a budget? So right now we're at $1,000. My entire budget for this is $1,500. So that's, you know, that's $37,000 for basically, like I said.
It would be hard to find a bumper for $400. Maybe a takeoff bumper.
I'm hoping. Yeah.
Something like that. But a winch, Roman, would put you over if you wanted to do a winch.
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, because we've been doing off-roading for so long, we do have relationships with a lot of the manufacturers, and they do want to promote their products. And the way they promote them is they, you know, if we ask, they'll send us the tires or they send us a winch. But at this point, that would kind of defeat the purpose, because then we're, you know, most people out there aren't TFL. They don't have millions of subscribers. And so we're trying to do this without actually, like, you know, reaching into the sponsor bowl and just do it as a way of showing that it can be done and that you don't need to, you know,
have connections everywhere.
Yeah, or have relationships. At the end of the day, I think that makes for a better video series.
I think so.
Yeah. But otherwise, I'm super happy with the Jeep, especially with those new tires. Now it actually drives like a Jeep. And of course, you know, Jeep has this brake lock technology, right? So where when you're off-road, what a locker does, of course, is it just locks the rear diff and or the front diff, so all four tires are spinning at the same speed. But in the sport, what it tries to do is if one wheel starts to spin, like one wheel's in the air, let's say, it tries to lock, the brakes will lock that wheel and then send power to the one that's not spinning. It's not horrible. It's not bad. It's somewhere in the middle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It kind of sort of works. It doesn't work nearly as well as a locker, but then again, you're not spending $15,000 over what you would spend on a Ruby.
Yeah, and also, I mean, brake systems like that, you know, traction control systems and, you know, off-road systems. First of all, they use brakes, you know, you're using your brakes. If you're on a long trail, let's say you're crossing Colorado and Utah, you could overheat your brakes too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's give and take in both of those ways of doing things.
So if you guys are in the Denver area and you do have a Rubicon bumper...
Call us.
Last time we did this, people called us from like Salt Lake City, and the cost of shipping that stuff or getting
would be prohibitive
for a cheap Jeep series. But if you're in the Denver area, hopefully close to the Salida, yeah. Let us know. And if you're asking a reasonable price, we're in the market for a Rubicon rear and front bumper to make our Jeep even more off-roady.
And you can get a hold of us at ask@tfltruck.com. It's one of our kind of aliases, ask@tfltruck.com.
Oh, I've got Andre's personal phone number here.
Oh, great. Can you send them to my wife's personal number?
call Andre's wife. I'm sure she'll be thrilled.
She would hate me so much. Wow. Okay.
So we just put up the second video, and then we actually filmed the third video.
Okay, what is that? Can you hint at that?
Yeah, I can tell. I hate podcasts where they're like, we can't tell you. It's a secret. And then they have like, we've got some huge announcement. I'm like, what's that? And they'll be like, oh, we're doing a live show. I'm like, oh, for God's sakes. 90% of your viewers who aren't in whatever town you're in really care that you're doing a live show. Anyway, I hate that. So I never, you know, unless it's an embargo and I can't specifically talk about it, we always talk about it. So yeah, we took the Defender, our cheap Defender, which is, we have the cheapest two-door Defender you could buy.
Okay.
We compared it to our cheap Jeep. And the cool thing is they're both two doors, and they're both
one
modified.
One of the more affordables.
Yeah, one's more. I mean, yeah. Defender was not cheap. I'm just cheap Defender, air quotes.
But as far as Defenders go, it's one of the most affordable ones.
Yeah, we bought it 1 year old for $53,000.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of money. But once again, a V8 Defender would be like $120,000.
Yeah, I mean, we knew it was 63, so it had 10,000 miles. But the cool thing was somebody had swapped out the tires on it, so it had KO2s. So they were both, in terms of their configuration, almost identical, right? Both two doors, both with swapped out tires. Of course, the Jeep has a V6. Our Defender has that baby 2-liter turbo. But otherwise, you know, cheap Jeep versus air quotes cheap Defender.
Where was this comparison done? Were you guys going to the same trail?
No, we did a different trail. We went up Cliffhanger 1.0. It's actually really good, dude.
Oh, okay.
Somebody did trail maintenance on it.
So the bushes are not encroaching too much?
No, somebody, there was a little bit of pinstriping that happened on Defender, which hurt my soul, but you know. If you don't use them.
Was there like a water crossing, you know, that puddle?
That water crossing was there.
Okay.
And then we went beyond Cliffhanger 1.0 and went all the way to the top. And it gets pretty rocky and gnarly up there.
Okay.
And so, yeah, first me and Tommy did it in the Defender, and then we did it in the Jeep for comparison. It was a really interesting comparison because the Defender doesn't have a lot of ground clearance. It has like, I want to say 9 inches.
Yeah, almost 9. Yeah.
Which is like Subaru levels, but for a Defender.
Yeah.
Plus it only has one bash plate, and that's under the engine, whereas the Jeep, and when you got on these rocky boulders, you really need it, right? Because the Jeep has a bash plate under the transfer case, under the gas tank, and I think there's three of them altogether.
Even the Sport?
Yeah, even the Sport. Okay. It doesn't have one under the engine, but the engine sits up so high, I think you'd have a hard time hitting it.
And by the way, our Defender 90, doesn't have air suspension. It's got coils.
Coils, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
which is why it also has lower ground clearance, but it doesn't have air for the long term, right? Because sometimes those suspensions, could fail.
They will always fail. It's just a matter. It's not a matter of
if or when.
It's just a matter of when. Yeah.
Or if you jack your Defender up all the way, it becomes really harsh, right? Yeah,
it's like being on a
tippy toes, basically. Yeah, or on stilts.
There's no give anymore, and it just knocks you about and bashes you about. So that's what we wanted the coil springs. So that was a really fun comparison. So it's Jeep Defender, jokingly, versus Jeep Jeep.
Sweet.
All right. Well, shall we move on and talk?
Well, there's lots of news in the world of
cars.
Let's
do the news, dude.
Let's do a news segment. So are we going to talk about the Ferrari F80?
No.
Okay, good.
No, let's not talk about the Ferrari F80 because Ferrari has never reached out to us, unlike Lamborghini.
With anything. Yes.
Thank you, Lamborghini. Really appreciate going to Italy to drive the new Urus. That video is up as well. We should talk about that, actually.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah.
So first of all, how do you say Urus or Urus?
Urus.
Urus, okay.
So Lamborghini names, of course, their vehicles after fighting bulls.
Okay.
And one of them was the Urus. And the Urus, of course, was the first Lamborghini SUV.
Let me look up a picture while you start.
So they updated it, and of course, Lamborghini is owned by the Volkswagen Group, and Porsche pioneered the fact that they figured out that if people had Porsche 911s or Cayennes or Boxers, that they also would love to buy an SUV from them. And so when the Cayenne came out, it just went immediately to their top seller and basically saved the company. And then Lamborghini did the same thing with the Urus, and same thing happened. It accounts for the majority of their sales. It's basically a Porsche Cayenne turbo underneath, as well as an Audi RS Q8. Uh-huh. But this is, Lamborghini-fied in that it puts out, get this, Andre, how much do you think it puts out?
I know because you and Zach have written about this and did videos about this.
789 horsepower.
That's huge.
Yeah. And they've done some.
And it's a plug-in hybrid.
It's a plug-in hybrid, yeah. So it gets up to, it hasn't been certified, but they're saying about 50 kilometers of all electric range. I forget how big the battery is, something like 30 kilowatt hours, something around there. It only gained like 150 kilos or 300 pounds, but what they did was they changed around the way that the power is allocated so that now instead of a mechanical diff, you've got an electronic diff, which allows them to send up to 80% of the power to the rear wheels, which means you can drift it. So guess what? I got drifted.
Did you drift it?
Poorly, but I got the drifted.
Okay, where were you? At the track?
I was at Nardo, which is Porsche's test track, basically in the heel of Italy. If you go all the way down, there's that little heel part at the bottom.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, Italy. I flew into Bari. Once upon a time, Puglia, which is the region, I think it's pronounced Puglia, was kind of the poor part of Italy. My best friend Steve is from there. But in the recent years, it has just exploded with everybody kind of discovering it, discovering the weather is perfect, the ocean, the Mediterranean's down there. It's just become super popular as a vacation destination. So we went there. And I got to go both on road and off road.
Wait, you went off road and
it was cool. It was
but I'm looking at this picture, Roman, and this picture has a gigantic 23-inch wheel and a small profile tire.
Yeah.
And you're telling me you off roaded this?
I did on those tires on sand and dirt, and it was magnificent,
like rally style.
Like rally style.
Okay.
And I was actually surprised by the amount of grip that those wheels and tires had. And I asked them. I said, can you get off-road tires for this? Because I would love to,
And a big lift.
Yeah, like you can, there's the Sturato, which is the Huracan, right? It came with off-road knobby tires.
Yeah, and slightly higher ground clearance, right?
Yeah. So I figured they would have a version of the Urus, and they said, we had off-road tires for it last generation. So this one is called the Urus SE.
Okay.
So plug-in hybrid. I think the E's for electrified. They said the take rate on the off-road tires in the last gen was less than zero. So they didn't even bother designing or so I'm speccing off-road tires for this one.
So apparently the owners of the Urus did not see it as an off-roader.
No.
Which is fine because, I mean, it's really sleek looking. It's kind of flashy, right? It's a status symbol.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically you're saying, I have arrived, and I have arrived in the Lamborghini SUV.
So let's do this. I had a chance to speak with the CEO, Stefan Winkelmann.
Sweet.
Of Lamborghini, and asked him, what's the future of Lamborghini? Is it electric? Is it gas? So what Lamborghini, of course, was known for was like big-ass 12-cylinder engines.
Yes.
Right? Big 12-cylinders.
And like really bold styling, right?
Yeah.
Just in your face.
In your face, right? But now they've you know, basically finished with the Gallardo. That's done. Same thing with the
Huracan.
The Huracan, and they've replaced it with the Revuelto.
Yes. And you've driven that too.
I drove that as well. Yes. At a racetrack. And that's basically the whole lineup, three cars. Revuelto, Tamerario is the new replacement for the Gallardo. That's a hard one. Tamerario, once again, a fighting bull. And all three of these cars are now hybrids that have 4-liter V8 twin turbos. And
the Revuelto is a V12, right?
That's a V8, I think, as well.
I don't think so.
Is this still V12?
I think so.
So that one has, is that a V12?
Yes, it is.
So maybe it's the Tamerario.
It's easy for you to say.
Tamerario that replaces the V8 for the 12. And
the 10 to the 8.
Yeah, the cool
it
thing.
It used to be a V10.
The cool thing about them, 10, okay. So the cool thing about them is less cylinders, more horsepower.
Yeah, makes sense because electrification is helpful, right?
Yeah.
The electric motors help make power.
So the Urus has one electric motor that's sandwiched in between the 8-speed transmission. What's the other one? I forgot it. What's the Huracan replacement again?
Tamerario?
No, that's the Gallardo replacement.
Revuelto?
Yeah, the Revuelto, yeah. So the Revuelto has, three motors.
Uh-huh.
It's got one on each front wheel, and there's one sandwiched in the back. So that's also crazy. That's over 1,000 horsepower. So basically, less displacement, but more horsepower.
That's the trend.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the trend. And but not everybody loves it, right? I mean, as soon as you are squishing the engine displacement, right, you're making small displacement engines, and you're making it more high-tech. So the Revuelto is a V12 plug-in. A lot of fans, old school fans, are against this, right? Because they want to hear the V12, or they want to hear the V10, or they want to hear, you know, whatever they want to hear.
Well, it's amazing because, let's face it, if you're just looking for performance, a pure electric Lamborghini would have more power, more instant torque than anything with a 12, 10, or an 8-cylinder in it. It just would. It wouldn't have, of course, the emotional drama, the theatrical fun of all those cylinders behind you, but it would certainly be quicker. Let's do this. Let's cut to me interviewing Mr. Winkelmann,
okay,
who is the best dressed man in the automotive world. That dude is just incredible. I was like, how do you dress so well, even casually, and like carry it off? I think part of it is he's super thin, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But let's find out if the future of Lamborghini is electric or if it's
all V12s.
All V12s. All right. Let's cut to that right now.
I'm sitting here with Stefan Winkelmann, the CEO and president of Lamborghini. Stefan, is it okay if I call you Stefan?
Yes.
Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it. So I kind of want to first ask you kind of the state of Lamborghini. And I know that you're here introducing a new car, the electrified Urus SE. And, you know, with Porsche several years ago, you could say that the Cayenne kind of saved the brand, but the Urus maybe supercharged the Lamborghini brand. Is that true? In other words, how important is Urus to Lamborghini?
Well, before we launched the Urus at the end of 17, beginning of 18, so the first generation, we had at that time the Huracan and the Aventador, mm-hmm. So we were a super sports car company with only two cars. And we always said we need a third pillar also to have enough power to reinvest in the future for the smaller volumes like now today the Revuelto and very soon also the Temerario, no? The follow of the Huracan. It was the best choice we could make because Lamborghini, as a DNA, is not only a super sports car company, but it was born also at GT cars in the 60s with the 350 GT, 400 GT, but a lot of others also like the Espada. And in times at end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, there was also the LM002, so the first SUV for Lamborghini. So it was credible to do a car like this. And it was really a good move because today we are in the best shape ever.
So obviously now when you look back, right, the Urus was a huge success. It supercharged sales of Lamborghini. It took you from making 1,000 cars to, what, you're going to make 10,000 cars this year, something like that, more than 10,000 cars. But when that change was happening, were you nervous? Were you worried about the fact that you're building, you know, a car that isn't a supercar but is a family car in essence?
You know, the decision was not taken overnight. It was a long process, mm-hmm. But it was the right one. And I was very relaxed because we also did studies on how, they say, this segment is going to develop. Because before we entered this type of market, there was nobody. You know, there was always ending with the premium SUVs, and we were the first one having a super sports car in the SUV segment. This was a challenge, but we took it in a way that there was no fear or doubt about the success story. But the success we are having is even more compared to the highest expectations we had. And it took the brand, we were selling around 4,000 cars with the supercars, to last year we had exceeded for the first time the 10,000 cars. A good mix for the future is that the two supercars are having 50% of the share and the Urus the other 50%.
And now you're kind of entering the next phase, I would suppose, with electrification, right? So you rolled out the Revuelto, which was electrified, and now you have the Urus, which is electrified. Do you think that a plug-in hybrid is the right car for the right time?
We have a clear strategy, which is to hybridize all the lineup, which we call Direzione Corta Auri. We started with the Revuelto, then the Urus SE, and the next and the last one of this trio is the Temerario. And this is the first step of our strategy in hybridization first, and then having also a full electric car. There's an easy promise you have to give to the customers. One is for sure the fact that you are going to have always an incredible design, very recognizable, but also very different from the generations before. And the other one is that you have to, yes, reduce the CO2 emissions, but on the same side, on the same hand, you also have to increase the performance. And if you maintain this, and we are maintaining this, then the success is sure, and we see it because the Revuelto is sold out until 27, and the Urus SE is already sold out until the end of 2025.
Do you think that the government rushed manufacturers into electrification? You know, I mean, there's obviously been a pullback from that. A lot of, especially luxury car buyers, are finding that they love the sound of the 12-cylinder, the sound of the 8-cylinder. Do you think that government got ahead of the customer? Is that fair to say?
But there's I would say that sometimes legislation is faster than the technology. And when these two things meet and on top you have fines to pay, then it's very critical for the manufacturers. If we are able to get, and I'm not talking about Lamborghini because we are, in a different environment, but for the full liners, for the normal commuter cars or city cars, it's about pricing. So development cost, material cost, it's about the charging time, the range, and the infrastructure, but also if there is sustainable energy you put into your electrification. So, and if this is going to work, then it's really a huge step also for the sustainability, not only of the cars, but in general of also the cities.
You see what I mean? The dude is a good dresser.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
I need to learn from that. I need to.
Well, first of all, we got to become super thin. I think it helps. Then stuff fits you.
Yes, I need to continue to lose weight. I'm losing a tiny bit of weight.
But he's the perfect guy for that role. Did you know he used to be the CEO of Bugatti? And for a while, he was the CEO of Bugatti and Lamborghini.
Wow.
So he's like German, but he grew up in Italy. or vice versa. So he's like perfect for that role. So, you know, Volkswagen owns Lamborghini. So, of course, German ownership, but of course, Lamborghini's Italian. So, yeah. Somebody who's fluent in both languages and can dress that well.
And is, both cultures, too.
Yeah, that's
really cool.
He's a really cool guy. I was so impressed by how, you know, well he knew the brand, how well he knew his customers, because selling Lamborghinis is a lot different than selling Fords.
So the future is all V12s all the time, right?
The future is hybrid right now.
Okay.
Hybrid and plug-in hybrid. Even though in their Revolto, the plug-in for the hybrid is in the frunk.
It's hidden. The charger, right?
Yeah, the plug-in. If you want to plug it in. So if you actually, wouldn't that be hilarious if you actually wanted to go and plug it in like publicly? You'd have to pop your frunk open.
That's really embarrassing, isn't it?
While you go to the local coffee shop in Italy or gelato shop. And, of course, whatever's in the frunk would be stolen potentially. So you'd have to move it into the back of the car.
So I think it's for your mansion, really. I mean, when you pull in to your gigantic garage, right, and then, maybe you have a mechanic there who can plug in your car, and it'll be charged for the next time.
What's the Italian for butler? Maybe do they have butlers?
I don't think it's James.
I would say those cars are like $800K, so they ain't cheap.
Yeah. And by the way, I love the orange color on a lot of their cars, and I love their styling still. I don't think they've lost a lot of their styling, the boldness that defines.
But people say the Tamarario. God, yeah. It'll take me a while to figure out that one, to pronounce it, is a little too tame. They think it's not – they think it's not Lamborghini. It's not over the top, doesn't go to 11, however you want to define it. It's just a little too swelt?
It's like svelte? It's more sophisticated. It's a lot more like a wedge-like.
Yeah, it's more sophisticated, right? Less like in-your-face Lamborghini-ish.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find the picture here. Yeah, no, unfortunately, I don't know, Roman, if I'll ever own a Lamborghini in my life. I mean, I might own one.
I would love to own an Urus.
Yeah. Can you put a hitch on a Urus?
Yeah, it tows, dude.
Can it tow?
Yeah, I want to say it tows, I think they said 3,500 kilos.
Oh, well, that's sizable.
I think that's 7,000 pounds.
Yeah, almost 7,000.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's what they said.
Well, here's one image of the Tamarario.
Yeah.
This one is in blue. And
you see what I mean?
It's really a wedge. I mean, it's almost a triangle at this point.
The most identifiable feature are those hexagonal lights in the front. But when it was unveiled, I think they did it in Pebble Beach, people were kind of underwhelmed because they wanted, but there'll be other versions of it. You know what I mean?
This is just the beginning.
There'll be like an SV version, and I'm sure they'll
STO
add
STO or something.
They'll add wings and bigger side scoops and everything else that goes along with that. Anyway, I think we've done enough on Lamborghini. Let's talk about our drag race, Andre.
Yeah, we did the drag race.
We did something that, as far as I know, hasn't been done in America. So, as you know, Hyundai has this crazy electric car called the Hyundai Ioniq 5N. And basically, it's in the best kind of hot hatch tradition, except it's all electric. It's got a bunch of different modes. It's got a little button that if you push it, it gives you 40 more horsepower, the N-Grin mode. And then we thought, well, let's race it against the new Tesla Model 3 Performance. And apparently in Europe, other publications have done that drag race.
Okay.
And the Ioniq 5N is quicker in a quarter mile.
Mm-hmm.
Should we tell them?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the car.
Yeah, that video is published, so at this point, we can tell them what happened.
Okay.
I'd say go to the video because it's fun. When we put up the little short version of it, people said it was the most boring drag race they've ever seen.
What's wrong with people?
Because there's no V8.
There's no noise bellowing from this?
But basically, in a quarter mile, the Tesla was about a third of a second quicker.
Yeah.
So like over. What'd you do there, Andre?
I'm trying to go to YouTube, to TFL car channel.
You just skip.
Sorry about that.
You can just skip there. Anyway, it was about a third of a second quicker. So like 11.3 in a quarter mile versus 11.5 for the Ioniq 5N.
Where's this? Oh, on the EV channel.
It hasn't published yet.
Oh, I thought you said you published it.
Well, when this airs, it'll be published.
Okay, but okay,
it,
I gotcha.
But when we're recording this, because we're time shifting, time traveling, it isn't published yet. But
so first of all, can I say two things?
Yeah.
I love and I hate about the Ioniq 5N.
Let me hear it.
First of all, we had the one in that blue color. Love the color. Love
Skittles blue, huh? Kind of like this. Kind of like
yeah. My, I almost like, I jokingly blue. Called it Smurf.
Yeah, Smurf car. Blue.
But it was in the best way possible. I meant it in the best way possible. Also, the proportions are right. What I don't like about the Ioniq 5N is that Hyundai and some others call it a SUV, you know, because it's kind of in that bigger proportion. I mean, it's a large vehicle, and it's really roomy inside, which is not a bad thing. But as soon as somebody calls it an SUV, I'm like, wait a minute. I really want to call it a hot hatch like you did, right? And when you come up to it in real life, like in the picture, it looks really nice and the proportions are great. In real life, you come up to it and you could see its proportions are bigger than you might have expected before. But it's still so fun. And it has that, you know, transmission. It mimics a real transmission.
Yeah, which is slower, actually. It's funny. So, you it's got three different modes where the car will mimic a shifting transmission. So you can have it mimic a transmission so that there are actual like moments of hesitation when you shift. And then it also does the sound. So it does like a, what would you think? Is that like a V8 that it's emulating? The crazy part is that sound, you know, the traditional combustion engine sound is only piped into the inside. So from the outside, no sound, but from the inside you hear it's like.
Yeah, and you could select a couple of versions of that sound.
Yeah, there's like
one that sounds futuristic,
like a spaceship where it goes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing a really bad job, but
it's like. But
every time it shifts.
I was a little skeptical before I got in the car with you, and it actually feels good. I mean, you can tell the sound is fake. But the whole experience, I think it adds to the experience. It doesn't take away from the experience. I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, my only complaint, and I struggled with this in the video, is there's just too many freaking modes in that thing, right? There's Engren mode, which gives you 40 more horsepower. I think it goes up to 40 from 601, so you get 641. Then there's another mode which changes the shifting pattern, so he puts you in sport mode. And then once you're in sport mode, if you want to drag race, then you got to go and change the way the battery is preconditioned. So that's another thing you got to change. And then you can tell it what kind of surface you're on. So you could say I'm in low grip surface, high. And I don't know what.
And you could also set it up to drift, right?
You could set it up to drift. Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know what's our track. Is it a low grip situation, a high grip, a medium grip? I just put medium.
It's not a high grip. It's not a prepped surface.
No,
right?
No.
It's an airstrip that's aged. You know, it's an aging airstrip, which means there's pebbles and sand sometimes on pavement and, you know, all kinds of stuff. It's not a high grip surface.
But I kind of do like Tesla's approach where you just put it, what's the mode you put it in? Because you were in the Tesla.
Yeah, I think it was called ludicrous before, and now it's like insane.
Yeah, so you basically.
You just put it in an insane mode.
And then you know, you just.
That's it.
That's it. unlike the Tesla, you can change where the power goes in that. In the Ioniq N, so you can say, I want like a majority to go to the rear wheels or front wheels so you can drift it. But when you're drag racing the Tesla, it's much easier. When you're drag racing the Ioniq, there's probably at least four or five different things that you've got to do. And I just kind of like the simplicity of not having, I mean, look, we're doing this drag racing on a closed course airfield with
lots of time.
With lots of time. Yeah. But if I want to just kind of, you know, take somebody from the stoplight, I wouldn't want to be messing around with all this shit.
All
this stuff. I would just want to put it into, you know, whatever mode and just floor it and have it go as quickly as it can go. So the other downside to it is the ride is definitely a little rough. Yeah, I mean, it definitely has.
On the Ioniq N?
Yeah, definitely has sports car suspension, which is fine. But, you know, I remember as a kid, I used to love like hot hatches. I still do. But good hot hatch had this ability to be both sporty and compliant. This thing is just sporty. It's almost in some ways like reminds me of the Honda Civic Type R in its ride quality, where it's not horrible. I mean, you can drive it, but you can certainly feel the bumps go through your spine every time you hit one. But you know, I think it's the first electric car that's actually fun to drive, Andre.
Yeah,
it's got soul.
Somehow they added back most of what electric car may have lost from like sound and character perspective. I think they added a lot of it back into it. I actually saw it at the LA Auto Show last year as well. So, and also the Model 3 Performance, this is the new one, right?
Yep.
Thanks to our friend Max.
Yes.
We had access to that car as well.
Yeah, I should thank Max for bringing his car because it's brand new. And he said that, let me find his email. He said that we should give out his referral number if somebody wants to thank him for letting us use a car, which I would recommend. So let me read that out to you. Oh, no, it's a website link. So maybe you can put it in the link below.
And yeah, we'll put it in the show description.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And then if somebody wants to refer him as a referral, and then he gets points, and then you do the whole Tesla thing.
And you get a discount as well.
You get a discount then. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Max. Really appreciate that you let us drag race a
car.
Not a lot of people would do that, right?
No. And also Max is really good because he's also an enthusiast, right? And he knows little things and details. And he asked me because I was driving his car.
Yeah.
By the way, thank you, Max. He said, Andre, select a supercharger nearby and navigate to it. Because it starts to precondition the batteries, and the batteries are a little bit warmer, right? And it helps drag racing too,
yeah.
Right? So there's little tiny tricks that you can sometimes play in order to get your car prepared in the best way possible for the best performance.
Yeah,
possible.
And we did some research, in the past, people who have drag raced a Performance 3 have put it in track mode, but it turns out that it's actually a little slower in track mode, so we didn't have it in track mode because that's more for a road course, not for a drag strip. But the crazy thing is, these cars do the exact same time within like a hundredth of a second every single time.
Electric cars are amazing that.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's kind of like drag racing computer, so I can see why people would say it's kind of soulless. But at the same time, you kind of know you're getting the best out of the car because there's nothing you can really do to make it faster or slower. It's going to do what it's going to do.
But the genesis of drag racing, Roman, there's also bracket racing, right?
Yep.
And in bracket racing, you must hit certain times, right? And if a car is helping you, being very consistent and very, you can repeat your results over and over and over again, it could help you actually in competition, right? You can actually compete against others in a very effective way.
So, when you put up the short, people said that's the most boring drag race. But did you find it boring when you were actually in the car?
I said at the top of this podcast that I was a little scared.
Yeah.
And I'm not lying. Like, at the quarter mile, when we reached the quarter mile, you and I, we're going side by side.
We're doing 125 miles an hour?
Or a little bit more, maybe 126, mm-hmm. 127. And also, this is not a perfect drag strip. Like we said, it's an airstrip. There's a little bit of dust. It gets a little squirrely at times, right?
Yeah.
So this is not boring.
No, when you're in the car, it's not boring.
When you're in the car, you're holding on for life.
I mean, these cars are 0 to 60 in like the 3 second range.
Yes.
So when you floor it, you're like getting tunnel vision, right? You're feeling all that G-force right at your head. I mean, I usually just put my head up against the backrest because I know it's going to push me back that far. So, yeah, it is not boring when you're in the car. I can see why if you're watching it, it's just like two cars taken off.
Yeah.
But in the car, it's by no means boring. But you're right. It's how do you...
how do you convey that?
Yeah, how do you tune it to make it quicker? I guess you could... I guess Tesla or Hyundai could sell electronic tuning packs, but there's nothing
and
you can do...
Tesla's done that before, like software updates over the air sometimes... That can add some
sort of
performance.
But there's nothing you can do to wrench on it, except for maybe put, slicker tires, like Hoosiers or something.
You could try to remove weight. I mean, that's one thing you could do, and some people have done something like that. But then it becomes less useful, right? If you remove door cards or seats, it depends on what your goal is.
But if you're looking at traditional drag racing, right, you could slap a supercharger on your big old V8 here or a turbocharger.
It'd be hard to get a new motor, right? An electric motor.
Right. It's coming, so I'm sure somebody will figure it out, Andre.
But you know what Model 3 Performance is? It's a smaller car that weighs less, right? And when you have a smaller car that's a little bit more aerodynamic and it weighs less, you don't need as much power to push it to the same speeds.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it's at.
All right, well, let's talk about one more electric car that we had here. We had the Kia EV9,
okay.
The three-row. There aren't a lot of three-row electric cars out there. There's Rivian.
Not many.
There's the upcoming Escalade. There's a Tesla Model X.
And then there's the Volvo.
The Volvo, the brand new EX90 EV, which I just drove. And then there's, of course, the EV9. It was interesting. I remember I saw this car a couple of years ago when it was first unveiled for journalists in Korea. And the styling was what really caught my eye. I mean, it is definitely bold and different. And Tommy and I just did a review of it, and he liked it. And I'm not sure I like it, Andre. It feels a little too Hammer-like. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't feel maybe – it's got the exact opposite problem of the Lamborghini we were talking about, right? That one may be not enough boldness to it. This one might be just a little too bold, especially for a three-row family hauler.
Well, I guess it depends on your family, right? It depends on your taste. I kind of like it. I like that it's distinctive, right? If you see it down the street, you know it's a Kia. There's no mistaking it for, you know, something else, a Honda or a Toyota or something else. I like it from that standpoint. Also, kind of got chunky wheel arches. You know, it kind of looks... I kind of like it.
Yeah, actually. Okay, fair. Yeah. Fair. Design is always subjective. Yeah. The other thing that I found striking about the vehicle, and maybe we've gone into peak screen, but when you sit down, right, they reinvented the way you shifted into, the way you started, the way you shifted.
Yes.
They've reinvented basically where all the controls are at. So you've got these fake buttons. You've got these haptic buttons that light up underneath, which is cool, but it's just a little too much. When you take it in little parts and pieces, then like, okay, I understand that the screen breaks into three sections, and the first section of the screen is kind of my speedometer and, you know, my fuel level, or in this case, your battery charge state. The middle is your HVAC, and the outside is your entertainment. But when you take it as a whole in one, it's just overwhelming with the amount of technology, including, like, it's got the footrest that comes up underneath the driver's seat that if you want to, like, take a nap while you're charging, you can do that. But I just felt, we of course had the GT line, $78,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Yes.
Yeah, and I just felt super overwhelmed. Like too much styling, too much technology. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a car that's meant for, let's face it, the soccer run, right? And I think that the people who will be buying this might feel, and maybe if you got the Wind version or the Air, whatever the hell it's called, not the top of the line, maybe it doesn't have all this tech, but this thing, two sunroofs, I mean, it had everything, and then, you know, more stuff thrown on top of everything.
Yeah, and so the first time I ever got into an EV9, I think it was like almost a year ago. I mean, it was some time ago. I couldn't find the transmission shifter.
Yeah, I know. It's because it's hidden behind the wheel.
It's hidden behind the steering wheel.
Yeah.
So I looked in the center console.
Same thing happened to me. I spent like 5 minutes. I was like, where's the freaking button to start this thing? And it's on the transmission stock. The power button is on the transmissions. I'm like, just stop reinventing this stuff already. I get it. You're trying to clear up space for the center console, but it's too much.
Yes. So, and also it's 78,000. 78, you said, right?
78.
It's 78,000. You know, you can buy yourself one heck of a Chevy Tahoe for that money. And Chevy Tahoe will have a V8 engine. It'll have similar space.
It'll be bigger.
It'll be a little bit more capable on the rough road because it'll be a little bit taller. It'll tow more. A Chevy Tahoe tows about 8,400 pounds.
Yep.
So it's fighting against, you know, different forces. But I think there's still a place for an EV9. Well, look,
on the positive note, I mean, this is not one step or two steps below a Lexus. It is a Lexus on the interior, right? The quality of materials.
It's well done. Yes.
Yeah, the headrest. Oh, my God. I would kill for that headrest. I just wanted to put my head back and take a nap. It was so...
So it's not like a wooden plank?
No, it's so squishy and comfortable. And then the seats, the embroidery in the seats, you know, the materials. Everything just feels top-notch, top drawer. And that part I did love about it, Andre, but you're right. When you're competing with an internal combustion engine car, it's hard to compete because I think it's got a 100 kilowatt hour battery, which gives you right around 270 miles of total range, which is fine, but, you know.
But what about the road trip?
You know,
that's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be challenging.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, I know they're switching to NACS, you know, standard Kia.
Ours still had the regular CCS.
Yeah, so, but it's not yet, right? It's not here quite yet. I mean, when it will be NACS, it may be a little bit easier in some areas, but still, it's not quite there yet.
So what else have we driven that's kind of been interesting? We just did a podcast where you were talking about the Suburban and Tahoe, so we won't.
We already dedicated a lot of time to that.
Yeah, so if you want to see that, head on over to the Talking Trucks podcast.
Or alltfl.com.
Alltfl. But let's talk about, we've got a lot coming up in the future, Andre. Much coming up.
Oh, my gosh. So first I want to give props to TFL Classics.
Yeah.
I think TFL Classics channel is amazing. Tommy and Case and the team do incredible job there. And there's a continuation story that has to do with a Civic.
Yes.
1984 Honda Civic.
As we
wagon.
Speak, Tommy.
It's happening right now.
Tommy and Case are driving a 1984 Civic with, when we got it, it had 69 miles.
We got it running.
Yeah.
It's part of the Honda Heritage Collection.
Yeah. So cars, just like humans, age when they sleep. And this was born in the middle of some of the worst emissions gobbledygook that you could put on a car. So it basically took us 6 months to get the thing running
correctly to be
able to drive it back to California. And those guys are in the middle of doing that. And it's, you know, it's classics. We've been pouring a lot of love into classics. And it's been disappointing because, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, we drove a Model T, 1927 Model T, up the type of Pikes Peak. Not an easy thing to do. And you know what else is not easy?
What?
Driving it down, because that's when it gets
up is one thing, but coming down.
Yeah, that's when the brakes start to go. And those things were not, you know, meant to go down a 14,000-foot mountain. And we got like 30,000 people who watched that. It was just very disappointing to put that much of a heavy lift. Same thing happened when we raced the Model T against the horse. So I don't know if we've lost the magic, if people just don't care about, you know, having a Model T race a horse just to make that video happened, took, you know, a month of logistics.
Well, at least a month,
maybe
more.
To
maybe
line up
multiple months.
To line up the horse, to line up the permissions, to race the horse on our drag strip.
To run up the horse rider. Yes. To help the horse be comfortable during the drag race.
So the Model T is backfiring, wouldn't scare it. All kinds of stuff. Anyway, I just feel like that channel is doing stuff that nobody else is doing. And because of the fact that YouTube is based on an algorithm, not necessarily based on like what people like or want to see, we're just not getting the kind of traction on those videos. So it's been tough. So I'm curious to see what happens when we put out that video of them driving.
I am hopeful because
to California.
The Honda, I mean, the initial videos with the Honda were huge, over, 500,000 views on some of those videos. And I think there's still a lot of nostalgia. I'm nervous for Tommy and Case.
Yeah, because they got to go over Vail Pass. They got to go up the Ike.
And it's a carbureted car.
Yeah,
and it was born in California. So, I mean, it lived in a warehouse in California. So
for the last 30 years.
It's not jetted for a high altitude. It's, you know, doesn't have a lot of power.
Tommy called me and he said they made it up Floyd Hill at 45 miles an hour.
Ooh.
So that doesn't
bode
well.
That's what the 80s were like.
Yeah.
You know, we forget sometimes what the 80s were like.
Imagine how fast or slow they're going to be going up that segment past Georgetown on I-70.
I don't want to even think about it.
Luckily, they have a chase vehicle, so hopefully they won't get run over by a freight liner.
A semi-truck. Oh, my Lord.
So
no, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, and then some other things that we've got coming up, of course, are Andre and I are going to SEMA.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks away.
Yeah, and then
it's going to be very soon.
And then the LA Auto Show.
Yes.
And then potentially CES, and then potentially the Detroit Auto Show. So the next 3 months are going to be super busy with that. You're going to go drive the new GMC, right?
Yeah. Also, next week, Ram RHO.
Ooh.
So there's an event for that in Michigan. Also next week, there is going to be an official birth of a new brand, Scout.
Scout
SUV and truck.
Tommy's going there for that.
Tommy's going to be there. So that's coming up within a week.
And then we bought a ID Buzz.
We bought an ID Buzz, and Alex just drove one, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it was built. So our friends, what's the name of the dealership you bought it from? You remember? I can't think of it. Those guys have been incredible to work with.
Yeah, sorry, there's so much in my brain, and I was just on the plane couple hours ago.
Hold on, I'll find it.
Let's look it up. But I'm just looking at our schedule coming up of things that we're doing, and there's so much stuff going on, and it's really amazing. So Mopar is coming to SEMA. There should be a new heavy-duty Ram at SEMA, officially, as far as kind of showcasing some of the accessories and some of the concepts.
So our man Steve at Garnet Auto.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been incredible to work with.
Garnet Auto.
Yeah, I have never had somebody that great to work with in Philadelphia. Not in Philly, in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to go. It's in Reading, is that right? Garnet, Audi, and Volkswagen, Reading.
Yeah, it's near Philadelphia.
Yeah, Garnet Auto is a website.
It's not far.
GarnetAuto.com. So he's been great to work with, so I can't wait to go pick up the ID Buzz. We might have Alex do it because that's where he's from, so he may drive it back. So we're gonna be hopefully one of the first to cross-country that as soon as it arrives in on the East Coast. Just a boatload of stuff coming, Andre. We're going to be so busy. So busy, my gosh.
It's
amazing.
I'm
getting too old for this. I just signed up for Test Fest because everybody else is out of town, so I'm going to be doing all the BMW
Test Fest.
Yeah, that's also coming up.
Yeah,
we get to drive all
amazing.
The BMW. I should be like sitting in my office eating bonbons and just telling people what to do. But instead,
and you're running around the country
and the world. It's not getting easier after 15 years.
No, it's getting harder.
Yeah.
Well, it's still fun.
It's still a lot of fun. It's so much fun.
I've been to 31 work trips this year.
And they're 31. All in Detroit.
And they're all in Detroit. I'm thinking about buying a townhome in Detroit.
You should, yeah. We love you, Detroit.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to this special episode of
Car Chat.
Yeah, we rebranded, and I'm still having a hard time. I'm getting old.
We're chatting cars.
Head on over, listen to Andre talk about the Freightliner. Andre and I over at Talking Trucks.
Yes,
and thank you guys, especially our patrons, for supporting us. If you want to support us, you go to patreon.com/TFLcar. And also, if you like Facebook. TFL Studios on Facebook or TFL Car. We've been putting up a boatload of stuff on Facebook. We also have two new young ladies that are now joining
part of the
team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So hopefully we're going to have...
We're growing the team so you can eat those bonbons in your... or whatever you're eating in your office. And everybody else, the team will be...
It's good we have unisex bathrooms because it's been all guys for way too long.
Yes.
All right, guys. We shall see you next time. Ciao.
Thank you.